Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Serial Clue Interview on this 29th of March, 2014. I'm your host, Corey Serial Quinn, taking you for the next hour as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can hit me up on facebook.com/SerialQuinn. Follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to my website, SerialGeraldQuinn.com. To check out any previous audio or audio from this show. Once the show, probably within the next 24 hours or so, that we'll have some audio from this particular program. But we begin with some madness, a Sweet 16 that, you know, you just can't. Well, I should say the last half of the Sweet 16, because Thursday's games are awful. Last night, if you're a fan of college basketball, you certainly had to be just, you know, going crazy considering the outcomes of the games and how close and competitive some of these games were. Friday night was as good as night, good of a night for college basketball that you will see in the Sweet 16. Thursday was awful. Let's be honest. Thursday was terrible. The Dayton-Stanford game was a boring. Wisconsin, you know, you never thought Wisconsin or Florida were in any kind of danger. Arizona, okay, they pulled away late, but Thursday was a snore fest. Let's be honest. Last night you had four matchups, all the games going right down to the wire, and headlining the Kentucky Louisville game, which was just tremendous from start to finish. Kentucky, the five freshmen, do it again. They take out another championship favorite, or another big time team. They did Wichita State, of course, in the elite in the round of 32. Now they take out the defending national champions, Louisville, who many people, including myself, had in the Final Four. Some even had winning a national championship. I didn't think Louisville was going to win it again, but I definitely thought that they would at least get to the Final Four. This Kentucky team. And watching them last night, and again, this is the great thing about college basketball, and this is, you know, when you get a bunch of freshmen, you just never, no matter how talented they are, you never know when they're going to mature as players. You just don't know. Now, 2 years ago, Kentucky was dominant from the start of the season. Now, they had some more veterans, or they had other veterans other than Anthony Davis and Kid Gilchrist on the team, a couple of juniors and a senior to go along with those freshmen that they had. But the majority of it was freshmen, and those guys clicked from the beginning. From the beginning, led them to a national championship. This year, there were times where you thought that Kentucky might actually miss the NCAA tournament. I mean, they looked that discombobulated. They were just, nobody ever questioned the talent. But they were a team that just didn't play smart basketball. I mean, let's be honest. They played dumb basketball. Turnovers, lack of a pure point guard. But John Calipari has completely turned the team around, and you have to give him credit. I mean, you can knock Calipari all you want in terms of how he gets players and how he gets these mega recruiting classes year in, year out. But this team right now, to me, looks like a team that can win a national championship. And you know, 3 weeks ago, if I said that to you, you would have thought you would have wanted to have me committed, because again, they looked like a team that was headed towards the NIT. I mean, the Harrison twins are playing great. Aaron Harrison, even with the elbow, they're making big shots. You have Julius Randle inside, who and this is what the pros are going to like about Randle, and this is why Randle's going to be a good, excellent pro, doesn't force the action, is a willing passer and facilitator. He made the pass to Harrison to Harrison on the corner for the big three that put Kentucky up by two with less than a minute to play. And the game is Wichita State before he, you know, put up some numbers. He had like six assists. So this guy, you know, again, he will not force the action. He will not force the action. And now Kentucky, you know, has everybody in unison. Now, the Cauley Stein injury could hurt if they were to play a Michigan State down the road or even a Florida. But that injury will not hurt injury will not hurt as they go up against a Michigan team that is mainly guard-dominated team. But right now, Kentucky playing as well as any team in the country. They've came together at the right time, take out Louisville. And, again, very strange game from the standpoint that Louisville looked to be in control for the majority of the game. I mean, there were three times. They were up, and you know, 13 early in the first half. Second half, they, you know, kept it in the range of, like, say, 3 to 7 points. Seven-point lead, you know, I'll tell you, the biggest moment in this game, other than the Harrison three-point shot, was at 64-57, under 4 minutes left. Kentucky had lost the ball on a turnover, I believe, and Louisville had at least two or three opportunities to extend the lead to 9 points. They miss the shots. Kentucky goes back and scores to cut the lead to five. I thought that was a big 4 point swing in that game. You know, Louisville goes up by 8, 9, 10 points at that point. I think that Kentucky would have been was on the ropes, but it was not to be. Calipari again beats Patino for the second straight year, second straight time in the tournament. Of course, he beat him in the final four in 2012. Also beat him in Rupp Arena this year. So you know that's certainly sweet for Calipari as Kentucky advances to the elite to face a Michigan team that was able to get by a game Tennessee team. Tennessee down with, you know, I was watching the game. I didn't get to see most of the second half. I did get to see the first half of the Tennessee game. And Tennessee looked out of it in the first half, down by 13 points, but their bigs kind of slowed down the game in the second half. Michigan's shooters couldn't make shots. In the second half, the game kind of slowed down to Tennessee's pace. And Michigan was able to just hold on and survive. So you'll have a Kentucky-Michigan regional final. Also, last night, you had Michigan State getting by Virginia, 61-59, and they grinded out, you know, half-court battle against two teams that both are great defensively. Virginia had a tremendous season. Nobody thought that they were going to make it this far. Nobody thought that Virginia was even going to definitely not win the ACC regular season and postseason tournament, but Virginia just comes up short. Michigan State showing you how deep and versatile they are. You know, that combination of Dawson and Payne in the middle is a combination that I don't think anybody in the country can match, to be honest with you. Those two in the middle are horses. Payne is like a pro. Payne is going to be an excellent pro. He is a definition of a stretch four in the pros. Then you have Appling, who's banged up, but you have a Travis Trice coming off the bench who had a big game. You still have Gary Harris. You still have Harris and Valentine. I mean, Michigan State is so deep. I mean, they are so deep. There's a reason why many people, including myself, picked them to win the national championship. But, again, Virginia was right there throughout the course of the game and just came up a bit short. Surprised at the end of the game that kids from Michigan State kid missed a foul shot on purpose that could have, missed a foul shot on purpose. I know it was 1.4 seconds, but I didn't think that he would miss it on purpose, but he chose to, and it turns out to be the right move. 1.4 seconds left. If the team makes an 80-foot heave, then they just deserve, you know, just shake hands, and they deserve to win the game. So Michigan State will take on UConn. UConn defeats Iowa State. I'm not surprised, and that is not an upset by it in any way, shape, or form. Sebastian Napier playing as well as any guard in the country right now. You have Boatwright. Daniels has a big game. Iowa State You know, Iowa State really missed a big man last night. We're not able to take advantage. Of UConn inside. And that's where you can hurt UConn is on the inside. Perimeter wise, UConn is as good as any team in the country out on the perimeter. But inside, they can be hurt. But Iowa State was not able to take advantage of that. So UConn will face a Michigan State team in New York City. There'll be about 20,000. I would say there'll be about 15,000 to 18,000. UConn fans in New York City at Madison Square Garden, but that won't shake Michigan State. They're used to playing against the top competition in the Big Ten over the course of the season. So you look at the Elite Eight now, where we stand. Florida, Dayton tonight. You got Florida, Dayton in the South, Wisconsin, Arizona in the West, Kentucky, Michigan tomorrow, and you'll have UConn and also Michigan State. Three Big Ten teams remain. Big Ten proven to be the best conference. With that, with, you know, having three teams in Elite Eight, you have a chance at a Michigan State Michigan championship. You have also have a chance at a Michigan State Wisconsin championship. But right now, if you were to ask me, by the way, no ACC teams are left in the tournament for the first time in 4 years. You have no ACC teams. In the Elite Eight, so that, you know, that's kind of a black eye for the conference right now. So right as of right now, I would think that if I had to guess the national championship game, I would say probably we're headed towards a Kentucky, Michigan State. Those would be the two teams that I was saying, Kentucky and Michigan State in the championship. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on a busy, busy program. Saturday, the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Saturday 215-6180 is your call number. Saturday morning headlines. Angel outfielder Mike Trout, University considered to be the best player in baseball. Well, if not he, Miguel Cabrera has signed a 6-year contract worth $144.5 million. This means he's going to skip all arbitration years. He won't be able to become a free agent until 2020, in which he'll be 29 years old. And at that point, if he stays on the current pace that he's on as far as production and even gets better as a player, and no reason to think that he won't, he's definitely going to sign a contract that could be in excess of well over $300 million. Like, he'll sign the biggest contract in the history of probably professional sports when he next becomes a free agent. And we'll talk about the Miguel Cabrera contract later on in the program. But Trout, again, just 22 years old, two-time runner-up as far as the MVP. The only thing that stood between him and two MVPs is Miguel Cabrera. Which shows you how well he's played. Miguel Cabrera, you know, has put up basically triple crown numbers his first, those were the last two seasons. As a matter of fact, 2012 did win the Triple Crown. And Trout, you know, is a guy who, you know, is the definition of a five-tool player. I mean, he could do everything. You know, hit for power, speed, hit for average, his field disposition, good arm. I mean, he can do. There's nothing he can't do. And certainly, again, a lot of people amongst the baseball circles do regard him as the best player in baseball. Anyway, you know, you can go back and forth. I mean, I myself think it's Miguel Cabrera, but if I'm building a team around a position player, Mike Trout, without question, considering his age, would be the guy who you draft. Number one. Disturbing story out of Philadelphia. DeSean Jackson gets released from the Eagles. And, you know, Jackson had been on the trading block for a couple of weeks now. And you really didn't think much of, well, why are they trying to trade this guy? I mean, he's 27 years old, prime of his career, coming off his best season, one of the most explosive, probably the most explosive deep threat in professional football since he came to the league, in 2000, I think 2009 was his first season. Yeah, 2009 was his first season. So why would they be trying to move this guy? And then it comes out that Jackson has gang ties to Crips who have been connected to multiple murders in the last 3 to 4 years. Now, I heard a lot of this on Facebook, Twitter, especially Facebook. I know a lot of Eagle fans, or a lot of people in the Philadelphia area. Well, they're trying to smear DeSean's name. And I said, okay, let me do my research, read a couple articles, read a couple stories online, check out here. And I don't blame the Philadelphia Eagles not one bit for getting rid of DeSean Jackson. You have to consider what has transpired in the last couple of years in the NFL. Okay. You have Darren Sharper, who could be doing 30 years in jail. Who knows what happens with that for, you know, drugging and raping women. Okay. Then you have last summer, Aaron Hernandez, who is directly connected to a murder of a former friend. Okay, and he had just signed a mega contract extension from the Patriots. In the NFL, more than any other sports league, it values talent, it values performance. There's no way in the world that any NFL team would get rid of one of its best players in the prime of their career coming off their best season if they didn't have pretty good rock hard solid evidence that the player could hurt their football team in the future. Or could hurt himself in the future. It's not going to happen. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen an NFL team release a top player in the prime of his career who was under contract like this. We've seen players lose. I mean, we've seen players get. You know, we've seen top players get overpaid in free agency. We've seen the NFL say, you know what, we don't think this guy's worth, you know, X amount of dollars. I know he's coming off a good year, but we don't. Or we've seen NFL teams say, "Hey, we believe that this guy is just a one-hit wonder, so let another team overpay for him for the majority of his career." Again, he's been one of the best deep threats in all of football, one of the more dangerous punt returners in all of football. So to me, you know, when you see the Eagles release him, and not even trade him. Listen, they tried to trade him. Where's the trade? Did anybody bite on the trade? In terms of trading for him, in terms of giving up something to get him? I mean, if you put all the off-season, off the field stuff aside, they probably, And let's say they were just trying to move him because they felt like they had enough receivers. They probably, you know, there would have been one dummy out there that would have given up a second round pick to get him. There's always a Raiders out there. There's always a Texans. There's always one dummy in the NFL that is that'd be willing to give up to overvalue a wide receiver, overvalue a player, a Pro Bowl caliber player. Always. Nobody gets came within a whiff of moving, making a move for Deshaun Jackson before he was released. Nobody. And there are a number of teams that need receivers. I mean, Carolina and the Jets are just a few, just to name a few. So the Eagles did the right thing and just said, hey, cut our losses. Let's move on from this. We don't need this connected to our organization whatsoever, and I don't blame them. Is Deshaun Jackson a gang member? No. Is he affiliated with gang members? Yes. Yes. I mean, listen, you can look the photos up yourself on Instagram, Twitter, what have you. One of the cops who interviewed him said that he put up a gang sign in a Redskin game last season. I saw a picture of Deshaun Jackson with gang members after one of them had been released from prison. Okay? And the game, one of the dudes had, he had been acquitted, but had the shirt that he had on in jail on during the picture that was being taken. It had L.A. County Jail. You know, NFL teams, you know, these guys are not just part of a fraternity. They're not just they are investments. They are investments. If you're an NFL team, you're constantly battling injuries, you're constantly battling, you know, reputation of a player, you're constantly battling the performance of a player. There's a lot that goes into a NFL team throwing millions and millions of dollars at a particular player. And anything that can jeopardize that, NFL teams have to take into consideration. That's all there is to it. And again, look at the Eagle perspective. You have young players that you draft year in and year out, or free agents that you bring in, young players. I mean, do you really want him around? Around 21, 22-year-olds that you rookies? I mean, what kind of influence is he going to have on that if he's hanging around this particular set of group of guys? Do you want that to seep into your locker room? Because based on his performance, based on who he is, he's going to have an influence on players. Players coming into the league, especially young receivers, might look up to him like, hey, you know, come to him for advice. You don't want that to seep into your locker room. Absolute right move for the Eagles to get rid of him. And, you know, listen, receivers grow on trees. Look, they can get another receiver. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, doesn't have to produce on the level of Deshaun Jackson. They're received there. This is a deep receiver draft. You still have some guys on the free agent market. They still have a number of receivers. I mean, they still have, you know, Jeremy Maclin's coming back. Riley Cooper's coming off a big year. You still have Selleck, McCoy. So, I mean, their offense will be fine. Their offense, 347-215-6180 is your call number. So the question now is, which team will take a chance on Deshaun Jackson? I guarantee you there are at least offers of six teams that are in the hunt to sign Deshaun Jackson. And be honest with you, at this point, you can get him at a much cheaper rate than normally a guy of his ilk on the open market. So it'd be interesting to see what his next contract is for and also who signs him. When we return, we'll talk some NBA, a lot to talk about in terms of the NBA, a big showdown this week in Miami, in Indiana, in the Spurs, Keith Rowland. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180. Of course, college basketball action tonight. Two Final Four spots will be occupied. Wisconsin, Arizona. That should be a great game, one in a one versus two matchup. And also you'll have Florida and Dayton. Dayton, the last Cinderella team left in the tournament. You certainly have to favor Florida in that matchup. In that matchup, Florida, and let me tell you something. I'll tell you something right now. Florida loses that game, it would be an utter disaster if they lose that game. Not only because they'll be losing to, as a number one seed, losing to a 11 seed, but as a, but they, Florida, this will be the fourth straight year that Florida's been in Elite Eight. They've lost the previous three in games that they easily could have won, easily, and have found a way to lose. If they ever came up short for the fourth straight year. And Billy Donovan has two national championships. He's a great coach, clearly, but that would be, man, that would be a brutal, brutal defeat. So I think Florida right now probably has more pressure on them than any team, and all the, even Michigan State. All these teams, you know, when you look at all these teams, whether it be Michigan State, whether it be Arizona, Kentucky, Michigan, Florida, you know, Florida by far has the most pressure on them to get to the final, to get to the Final Four. You get to the Final Four and lose is one thing. Anybody could lose in the Final Four. Anybody could lose in the national championship game. No dominant teams this year, but Florida has to get to the Final Four this year. They have to. So we'll see if the pressure of that affects them in any way, shape, or form. I don't think it will that much. They're a veteran team. The best team of number of seniors on their team. Obviously, they're well coached by Billy Donovan, who's won, like I said, won a couple of national championships, been in three national championship games. NBA, big week in the NBA. There's a lot going on in the NBA as we head towards the playoffs. Indiana and Miami still in a race for number one. Miami was able to pick up a game that they lost on Wednesday night to Indiana, but you know, with Indiana losing to Washington, Miami destroying Detroit. So this is one game back in the loss column. But the problem is for Miami court is the fact that Indiana right now owns a tiebreaker, and they would have to, you know, finish, if they finish tied, advance would go to Indiana. So Miami has to finish a game ahead of Indiana to get home court advantage. But you know, It's all relative to if you're Miami. If you're Miami, you've won Indiana before in the playoffs on the road. So all you have to do is win one game and win a series in six games. Much more important for Indiana to have home court than it is Miami. I have a lot more confidence that Miami could go to Indiana and win a game seven than I do Indiana going to Miami and winning a game seven. Very good game between the two. All their games have been intense, physical, and close in terms of the three matchups. I thought, again, it was a borderline must win for Indiana just to feel good about themselves. They had not been playing well for the past, you know, few weeks, for the past basically 6 weeks. Indiana, you know, what you learned is, I think that Indiana moving forward against Miami is going to have a guy who's able to close games out. A lot, you know, a couple of those possessions, especially when Lance Stephenson was kicked out, which was a ridiculous technical, by the way, technical foul called on him for, taunting Dwayne Wade. That was just, you don't call a second technical at that point in the game to a player of Lance Stephenson's caliber at that, you know, at that moment. So that was the time the refs just swallowed the whistle and just walked back to the bench. There was a lot of trash talking, a lot of back and forth going up and going back in that game. But I think what you learn from Indiana is they're going to need a closer against Miami. And Evan Turner, you know, came in, did a good job, and that's what they got Evan Turner for. You know, if Lance Stephenson, obviously not wanting him to get kicked out, but if Lance Stephenson not playing well, he's making bad plays, taking dumb shots, you have Evan Turner who can come in and be more than a serviceable backup for a Lance Stephenson. But you don't, with that being said, you don't want Evan Turner being your playmaker in a playoff series against Miami or against anybody for that matter. Paul George has to be that guy. Paul George has to have the ball in his hands, direct the offense, facilitate. He's a willing passer. We know he can finish. So Paul George has to be that guy that finishes against Miami. So that you need to see. We need to see more of that from Indiana in the playoffs, especially when they face Miami, which they will again coming up, in June or late May, early June. The second thing is finally, and it took basically almost a month and a half, but finally LeBron James has a big game with Dwayne Wade on the floor. LeBron, 38 points, 8 rebounds. Wade did not play well, got banged up with the Achilles a little bit. I tightened up a little bit towards the end of the game. But this was the first time that both of them that had been on the floor and LeBron that had a great game. So maybe that could kind of shake off that, that readjustment. Maybe LeBron's finally made that readjustment of him and Wade playing together and him being able to be effective when Wade is on the floor. So you had that going for you. And again, if you're Indiana, the problem I have with Indiana winning, not only beating Miami, but even winning a championship, is the fact that they're just so bad offensively. And that's what I kind of took out of that game, too. Because Miami, listen, they only scored 84 points against a Miami team that everybody's been scoring on. I mean, Miami defensively this year has been awful. And I'm just wondering, can a team – we know how great Indiana is defensively, but can a team be as inept offensively as Indiana is and win a championship? Think about the teams that have won championships. When is the last time we had a defensive-oriented team win a championship? I would say probably the 2004 Pistons, and even they were efficient offensively. I mean, Billups, Rasheed Wallace, Rich Hamilton, those guys were again, Tayshaun Prince, they were known for their defense. They were defense first, but they were an efficient offensive basketball team. And I just wonder why is Indiana so bad offensively? You have Paul George, you have Roy Hibbert, you have David West, Lance Stephenson, all are very good offensive or above average offensive players. All of them. Now you have Evan Turner coming off the bench. They miss C.J. Watson, so they'll probably get him back. George Hill, even as a point guard, not a great ball handler, but offensively he can score. So I think Indiana should be a much better offensive team than what they are. And again, look who's been winning championships since 2005. I mean, San Antonio, the Lakers, Miami has a couple, Celtics. Those teams were excellent offensive basketball teams. Hard to win, This year, you have Miami, Oklahoma City, and San Antonio as the teams that everybody, I think, thinks that can win a championship. I still don't put the Clippers in that conversation. But those all, Miami, Oklahoma City, and San Antonio are excellent, tremendous offensive basketball teams. So we'll see what happens with that moving forward. The last meeting Indiana and Miami has will be coming up in a couple of weeks. It'll be the last Friday of the season. How much that game means, certainly we'll see how much that game means as that will be in Miami. San Antonio has won now 16 straight games. They had the best record in the league, just ripping through people. And they're not just beating people, they're killing people. The average margin of victory is 16, ironically. But Tim Duncan made some very interesting comments this week when, he has a contract through this year and next year as well. Next year will be the last year's contract. And he basically said, so when he was asked whether he would play out his contract, he says he's taking it game by game. And I think there was a very – and for a guy, he doesn't say things to draw attention. As quiet and as unassuming of a star that you ever see in sports, that was a very telling and revealing statement from Tim Duncan, meaning that he could retire after this year. And I think San Antonio is putting everything into this year to win a championship. Not to say they haven't done that beforehand, but I really think this year they are just putting just every, you know, they're going for it. So something to keep your eyes on. Again, San Antonio right now is rolling. I just think it's a case of matchups. I still think Oklahoma City, I still think San Antonio does not match up well with Oklahoma City. If those two teams play in the playoff series, Oklahoma City will come out on top. If some way Oklahoma City, and I don't think it's going to happen, if Oklahoma City some way to get somehow to get knocked off before they play San Antonio, then San Antonio is easily by far the favorites to come out the Western Conference. And I think, you know, if they get to the finals again, I think they'll probably, Miami or Indiana, definitely if it's Indiana, that San Antonio will probably win a championship. I mean, they have all the pieces. Their guys are healthy. They're well-rested. We know Popovich as a coach. So we'll see what happens with that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll get into some baseball. And also, Are You Kidding Me? That's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Quinlan Review. We'll be right back.
Well, we're moving on now, moving on to the sun, to a deluxe apartment in the sky.
Is your call number as we discuss the world of sports. Busy program. Cyril Quinlan Review. Baseball season will be completely starting on Monday, opening day. You have a Sunday night game. Tomorrow on ESPN as well. I think it's Dodgers Padres. Dodgers, of course, have already played a couple games. Start the season against the Diamondbacks, which to me was ridiculous, playing two games in Australia. Clayton Kershaw is banged up, will not make his next start, so that's something to keep your eye on. Should be a tremendous baseball season. Baseball has stiffened up its penalties as far as PEDs and drug use. They've gone from, you know, first offense, 82 games, second offense, you'll receive 162 games, and third offense, of course, you're banned from the sport. And regardless of first or second offense, anybody caught, you're done for that season, including the postseason as well. So baseball trying to tighten up on you know, illegal use of steroids and PEDs. Certainly they were embarrassed last year with all those guys, you know, whether it be Nelson Cruz and amongst others, with the various 50-game suspensions and what have you, Melky Cabreras and some of those names. So now you really have to be an idiot to do a PED. Maybe there's some drugs out there that are still untraceable, who knows, but now at least, again, to me, the big part of that is you know, if you get caught, it eliminates you from the postseason. You can't have a guy who has been, it took baseball too long to get to this point, but you can't have a guy who has been caught using drugs and be a factor in terms of winning a championship. And that's just ridiculous. I mean, let's say he gets caught for the first time in April. He's back by, you know, July or June. June. You know, he'll be back by June. He's still in with a chance to still impact the playoffs and the pennant race. So I certainly agree with that adjustment to the penalty. And I think it's going to get to a point to where if you're called once, I think it should even be harder. I think if you're called once, you should be suspended for a year, no postseason. And if you're called twice, you're done. That's why I think the direction that they need to move in ultimately. We'll see how long this lasts. We'll see how long this lasts as far as this particular set of rules, and see if it doesn't get upgraded in a couple of years or upgraded in a couple of years or so. Miguel Cabrera, of course, signed the largest contract in baseball history, or one of the largest contracts in baseball. It's actually not the largest contract in baseball history, because remember, Alex Rodriguez signed a contract the A-Rod contract was for 10 years, $275 million. Now, in terms of totality, this has the potential to be the largest contract in the history of baseball. It has a chance to be over $300 million. Now, Cabrera has 2 years left on his current deal at $44 million. He signs an 8-year, $248 million extension. The 11th and 12th with vesting options for the 11th and 12th year at $30 million apiece. He will never see that. I'm telling you right now. He'll never see that. He will not see the 11th and 12th year of this contract. I understand I think the contract was a panic move by Detroit. Now, depending on who you believe, we'll never know what happened. What happened with Max Scherzer. The Tigers claimed they offered him a 6-year extension for $144 million. Scherzer turned it down. Scherzer's people deny that. Who knows? If Scherzer did indeed turn that down, then he's nuts, because he's not going to get that much more on the open market after he becomes a free agent, especially if he struggles this year, coming off a 21 season. He's going to get paid on the open market, but, you know, you're risking injury. I mean, sign the $144 million extension. I mean, like, that's – you see what Mike Trout is doing right now. But anyway, I think that the Tigers don't feel like they're going to be able to re-sign him, and they needed something. They needed a shot in the arm to, I don't know, quiet the fan base or to excite the fan base. So, you know, they go and sign, you know, their best player, arguably the best player in baseball, to this enormous deal. And again, you look at the history, Miguel Cabrera is a great, great player, and his chance will be an all-time great. I mean, that's all there is to it. But he's 30 years old. He'll be 31, I think, in April. That's when production starts to drop. I mean, there only been a handful of players in the history of baseball I'm excluding the steroid users or people even connected to steroids. So that excludes Bonds. That excludes Sosa, McGuire, Palmeiro, even David Ortiz, Manny Ramirez. That excludes a number of guys. I'm looking at guys who have never been connected to steroids in the history of the sport. Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Frank Thomas, Ernie Banks. Only those few have produced into their mid-30s. Most of the guys, and whether it be Mickey Mantle, Ted Williams, Willie Mays, Jimmy Fox, whoever you're looking at, most of those guys, you know, Joe DiMaggio, whoever, I mean, even immortal players, their production falls off dramatically. Frank Robinson, the production drops off dramatically when they turn 30. Dramatically. I mean, look what's happening to Albert Pujols now. Albert Pujols his production has fell since he came to really began in the 2011 season with the Cardinals, but since he came to Anaheim, he You know, he hasn't been the same player. He has had some nagging injuries. And, you know, the Albert Pujols that you saw in the 2009-2010 season, that Albert Pujols is done. He's gone. I mean, you'll never see Albert Pujols again. So, again, these 8 to 10 year contracts for positional players is just, you know, they're extremely risky. I mean, they look good now. I mean, how many more years do you think Miguel Cabrera has performing at even close to his level? Maybe, you know, 3, 4? So, it's something to be, you know, even with Alex Rodriguez. Again, I won't even count Alex Rodriguez because, again, connected to steroids. But even his production, even connected to steroids, his production started falling at the ages of 31, 32, and he hasn't been the same since. So, again, I think that this was a clear overreaction, a clear panic move by Detroit to kind of make up for the fact that they're not going to be able to sign, more than likely going to be able to sign Max Scherzer in the offseason. And again, look at baseball. I mean, look at baseball in terms of the pitchers. The top pitchers are still more important than the top everyday players. You need top pitching. How many championships have the Angels won with all that offense that they have in the last, when they started signing all these, you know, Pujols and having Trumbo and having, you know, now Mike Trout? Giants have 2 championships in the last 4 years with only one great player, and that's Buster Posey. Everybody else is a role player, but they have had dominant pitching. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll have another edition of Are You Kidding Me? That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Never gets old, Jim Mora. Never gets old. 347-215-6180. Good show today. Saturday, but Cyril Quinn Review returning after basically a month's hiatus as far as not so much shows, but quality shows. We kind of changed up the pattern of our start times, and it didn't work out. It did not work out. So we hope we'll be back in our 11 to 11:30 time slot and be able to produce high-level sports talk radio here on Blog Talk Radio. Cyril Quinn taking you until 12:30 as we discuss the world of sports, with a basketball-heavy program with the NCAA tournament, and also a lot of goings-ons in the NBA as they head towards their regular season, their playoffs as well in a couple of weeks. The Western Conference, Oklahoma City is there's 3 games behind San Antonio. Unless something crazy happens, San Antonio is going to have home court advantage throughout the playoffs, not only Western Conference, but throughout the entire playoffs, unless they have a collapse down the stretch. But right now, it's the time for another edition of...
Are you kidding me?
Current and former... McMahon head coach, basketball coach Steve Masiello, of course, was released from South Florida after South Florida came to find out that he lied about his college degree or lack thereof in terms of graduating from Kentucky. Now, listen, these schools now have become so sophisticated as far as investigation and you know, background checks. The firm that they paid, they paid $60,000 for this particular firm to help not only them find a coach, but also do, you know, background checks and what have you. $60,000. This is South Florida, okay? So, you know, there's no hiding anything anymore. You can't. I mean, I don't know when these coaches are going to learn. And again, there's nothing to gain. I don't see anything to gain by lying about what university you graduate from or where you graduate, or lying in terms of where you graduated or not. Maybe you can get away with this 5-10 years ago, but not in 2014. It's just impossible. I don't think that he would have not gotten the job had he said, you know what, I went to Kentucky, but I still have, I'm 10 credits short. I really don't think they care. They don't care about the fact that he graduated or didn't graduate from Kentucky. They care about the fact that he lied about it. Graduating from Kentucky, nothing has no impact on his ability to coach basketball. So, again, I don't know what he was thinking. Clearly, he wasn't thinking. You saw the price that George O'Leary had to pay. George O'Leary would have been a coach at Notre Dame. Instead, he's the coach at Central Florida, not exactly Notre Dame. I mean, he has some good seasons there, and he's going to produce probably top five, top two quarterback as far, or possibly no more pick in the draft in Blake Bortles. But again, Notre Dame, Central Florida, you do the math on that one. Peyton Manning wanted less money than Tom Brady.
Are you kidding me?
So when Peyton Manning was negotiating his last contract, when he came back to football in 2012 off the four neck surgeries, he was negotiating his contract. He signed a deal for, you know, $18 million a year. Total is $96 million. And apparently he was incensed when that contract was going to supersede what Tom Brady was making, and he demanded that he be paid less than Tom Brady. Okay, so what are we supposed to take from that? Are we supposed to take that Peyton Manning thinks that Tom Brady is better? Are we supposed to take that Peyton Manning doesn't want to, like, what? I don't understand this. Because Tom Brady is not the highest paid quarterback in the league. He's not. I mean, Aaron Rodgers makes more money. Drew Brees makes more money. Now, Joe Flacco makes more money. And at the time that contract was signed, I believe Drew Brees was the highest paid quarterback at that particular, in 2012, at that particular time. I think that, as a matter of fact, it might be Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. So it wasn't like, I guess I could understand it more if Peyton Manning just didn't want to be the highest paid player in football, highest paid quarterback. But this was specific to Tom Brady. And again, if I'm Peyton Manning, if it doesn't affect our ability to sign other players, I would take as much money as possible. I mean, when you lose, yes. When you win, you're going to get the majority of credit. But if you lose, you're going to get blamed. I mean, what happened in the Super Bowl? You know, the Denver defense was awful. The Denver defense didn't play well in the Super Bowl. The special teams were horrible. But who got blamed? Peyton Manning. That's kind of how it works out. It's like that. That's part of playing quarterback. So I don't understand why Peyton Manning would want to take less money than Tom Brady. I just don't get it. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Serial Crime Review. When we return, we'll look ahead, look back, and look forward at a great night of college basketball. Look forward to the Elite Eight that's coming up on this latest edition of the Serial Crime Review. We'll be right back. Yeah. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Serial Criminal Review. NCAA tournament has now been whittled down to 8. You have 3 Big Ten teams, Michigan State, Michigan, and Wisconsin. 2 number ones remained, Arizona and Florida. No ACC teams, no Big 12 teams as well. Big 12 really struggled in the tournament. I mean, Kansas get knocked out. Kansas got knocked out early. Anyway, I mean, you had a couple of them two of them in the Sweet 16 with Baylor and Iowa State, but I think people expected Kansas to go a little bit further. Again, no ACC teams, no Big 12 teams. You still have, again, 3 Big 10 teams, so Big 10 proven to be the elite conference this season. Today, you have Florida, Dayton in the South region, Wisconsin, Arizona. The Wisconsin-Arizona is the only 1-versus-2 matchup in the four regions. Should be a tremendous matchup with Arizona, Wisconsin. Arizona, Wisconsin, I feel like can play any style. This is a much better, this is the best offensive Wisconsin team, that Bo Ryan's ever had during his tenure at Wisconsin. They have a number of guys that can score. Arizona, of course, has a lot of talent in their own right. Nick Johnson, Aaron Gordon. I like Wisconsin in this game. I pick Wisconsin to get to the national championship, and I haven't seen anything that would change my mind about that. I think this is their year. I watched Wisconsin a lot during the season. They had some, middle of the season, they kind of struggled, but they were 13-2. They're 14-2 in their last 16 games. They're 14-2. Beat a number. Probably beat more quality teams than anybody in college basketball as far as a number of top 50 wins. So I'll take Wisconsin in that game. I like, of course, Florida to beat Dayton. I don't think there's any way Dayton's going to win this matchup. I'm still not sold on Dayton at all. I'm sorry. I mean, Ohio State, Syracuse, teams that struggled over the course of the season. Stanford's not that good to begin with. So this is really the first real team that Dayton's going to play, as far as I'm concerned, that's championship caliber. So I'll take Florida. I think Florida wins by at least 10 points in that game. As far as tomorrow goes, Kentucky. You have Kentucky versus Michigan, UConn versus Michigan State. I like Kentucky against Michigan. I think Kentucky. I think Kentucky's sides in the middle will be too much. Randall. I don't think Michigan has anybody that can handle Randall. Even Kentucky. Everybody Kentucky's starting lineup is 6'6". I mean, they have a ton of size, not only in the middle, but in the perimeter as well. Again, you love the karma Kentucky has right now. They seem to be one of those teams that have just gotten hot at the right moment, and I think that will carry them into the Final Four. And as far as UConn, Michigan State goes, that will be a very good game. UConn obviously will have the crowd on their side. They'll have, Shabazz Napier. They could arguably make a case of having the best player on the floor on their side, but Michigan State has too much overall talent, and especially on the inside with Payne and Dawson, and then Gary Harris on the outside. I think too much Michigan State overall ability and talent on the inside. I think Payne and Dawson have big games, so I like Michigan State. So I'll take, I think we're headed towards a Wisconsin. I think we'll have Wisconsin, Florida, Kentucky. And Wisconsin, Florida, Kentucky, and Michigan State, I think, will make up the Final Four. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Serial Criminal Review. I will see you next time. Enjoy the games. So long.